Welcome to Season 3 of the Leadership Educator Podcast, your source for knowledge and expertise on facilitating leadership learning. Are you passionate about leadership education? Do you want to expand your resource toolbox with practical strategies for teaching, learning, and program design? Well, this is the podcast for you. If you haven't done so already, please hit subscribe so that you'll never miss an episode.
Well, hello and welcome to the Leadership Educator Podcast. My name is Dan Jenkins and I'm Chair and Associate Professor of Leadership and Organizational Studies at the University of Southern Maine.
And I am Lauren Bullock, Assistant Professor of Instruction at Temple University, and we are both so excited for this episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast.
We are. So the purpose of this episode is to is to wrap up season, I don't know, two-ish, three-ish, I guess officially season three, but you know, things did not go as planned this year. I don't know if y'all are experiencing anything similar. But so when we started this podcast last August, August 2019, we wanted to define, you know, who are leadership educators, discuss, you know, our work around being and becoming leadership educators. And after that first season, we really wanted to share, you know, where can leadership educators actually go for more resources for teaching, for starting a program, you know, for curriculum, you know, you name it. And then conferences being a really great place to learn about trends and also connect people with others and do networking and just, you know, find people with similar interests as your own, whether they be in curricular or co-curricular, you know, leadership programs or even outside of higher education, but still doing some type of leadership development. And so this year we asked leaders from the various ILEC groups. So ILEC is that Inter Association Leadership Education Collaborative, all those groups to define how each of their organizations and professional associations engage leadership educators. So if you remember from earlier this year, we had guests from all of these big professional associations like NASPA and ACPA and let's see, NACA, ILA, ALE, I know I'm missing one.
ACUI, LEI.
The NCLP, you know, again, yeah. The going back to the alphabet soup piece. And but we not only learned about the different conferences and other professional resources and engagement and development opportunities that they offer, but we also learned about how individuals that had, you know, spent so much time either as volunteers or as staff in these organizations became a part of those organizations, but also how they built and learned about building relationships on their own. And we talked about the value of each association too in the field and, you know, what attendees could expect from the organization, not just during the conference, but, you know, throughout the year.
Those conversations were so meaningful. I've been around like NASPA for over a decade and ACUI even for a long time. And it was interesting to hear from the leadership the various ways in which those organizations are different. It made me want to register for every single one of those organizations because they each provided just a different experience. And that nuanced difference could be, you know, super helpful to us as we're teaching and running leadership programs. Now that, you know, you and I've gone through this year, we can almost say we survived 2020.
Almost.
I feel like at 11 and a half, 10 and a half months, we should get, you know, normally I'm not for gold stars, but I think at 10 and a half months, if there was a year that warranted a gold star, this might be the year. But when, now that we've kind of wrapped up that season, season three-ish, because we did integrate some COVID stuff as things popped up. Now that we are wrapping up, because everybody transitioned to virtual conferences in that short period of time, I think this episode will talk about our experience as participants and our experiences as presenters, and then a little bit about planning. What do you think, Dan? That sound good?
I think that works out okay.
Okay. All right. So let me jump in first before I, you know, because I have attended a billion conferences, it seems. And this year I had plans on attending LEI, ILA, and ALE for sure. Those are the three that I normally go to because that those are the communities that I've built. And so I went to the virtual conference of ALE in July and I loved it. It was my first virtual conference. I thought it was great. I miss being in person, but I feel like these virtual conferences are a great temporary replacement. And I was looking to connect with my colleagues that I would normally connect with, as well as keeping this rhythm of learning. So I don't know if this happens to you. You regularly, you know, are in July or in the summer at ALE in late October, early November at ILA, and then you go to LEI in December, like you have this rhythm to your learning. Sure. And I think the virtual conferences were really nice to keep that rhythm. However, I did find that it was easier to be a little bit distracted as a participant. So for example, if my son came in because he was in school or he was in class, I missed a big chunk of the conference and wasn't able to just kind of focus in and tune everything out. Whereas if I was in person, you know, obviously my husband, well, hopefully my husband, we know how dads parent, but hopefully my husband would have been taking care of it.
That and hurts, I would Lauren, not.
I should say, full disclosure, my husband is a great parenting partner, but I also have boys, so they just all do the same things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think there was definitely some benefits, some pros and cons from the participant perspective. What about you? What did you think? Like, and you do all of the things, plan, attend, speak, you do all of the things at these conferences. From strictly your participant perspective, sure. Thinking about this year, what was your experience?
Yeah, no, I would totally agree with you about just the rhythm of things, particularly as I've engaged as a professional in leadership education. It is, you know, July, I'm looking forward to being with my folks with the Association of Leadership Educators. And then, you know, I know October, November comes around and there's going to be ILA. And then in an even year in December, it's going to be LEI. You know, I've only missed one LEI since 2010, or excuse me, since 2014, I think, when it was in Texas. So I just wasn't able to get out there. But, and, you know, calls for proposals are starting to come up in the spring here for those two conferences, you know, and we kind of plan our, and I say we, I'm thinking about, you know, particularly, you know, faculty and many student affairs professionals that are engaged in those two or, you know, three, four plus organizations, if you include ACPA and NASPA and what have you, that participate in LEI. And that's just the rhythm of things, as you said. So as a participant, it's interesting because, you know, I reflect back on July ALE. So that was one of the conferences that had, you know, we were going to be in Nashville. And of course, that didn't happen. And so, but they did an amazing job going back to our word of the year, pivoting to a virtual conference and just knocked it out of the park back in July with a great, great staff and Marianne Lawrence and leading that charge who we had on the show, you know, back in the spring. And thinking about ILA, so they made the call fairly, you know, at a pretty, you know, good point in the summer. I want to say July or August at the latest. They had said, look, this is going to be virtual, you know, because of all the reasons that you can imagine, international travel and funding, and they brought the price down considerably, and, you know, we're able to engage students and faculty and staff and what have you. So, you know, having the time to plan several months out that this is going to be a virtual conference. Now, Leadership Educators Institute, that's coming up in December, we'll be participating in that too. And that was another one where, you know, the call was made at a reasonable time, like, hey, look, this is going to be a virtual conference. You know, I'm thinking about going into 2021, there's so many conferences that now we know, like, this is going to be a virtual conference. This is not planned to be a face-to-face conference. And then, you know, huge yeah. transformations are going to have to be made. So that's just a much different experience. And so I think ILA, they did a great job with facilitating the conference. You know, you were able to engage, in my opinion, speakers from all over the globe that perhaps they wouldn't have had access to. I mean, you had Ed and Peter Schein talking about, you know, their book, and it's just great to, you know, I mean, Ed Schein was amazing. That's probably one of my, like, definitely big time academic crushes to see someone like that to engage with was, and the guy just spoke from the heart and shared so many cool things. Then you had Ron Riggio and Ron Heifetz having a debate with each other about followership and other things. And, you know, it's just these things that, you know, it's hard to get people in one place physically, no matter what the association is, and to be able to access everything online like that. I think too, that as a participant, you know, you walk into a conference session and whoever you're sitting next to, you can, you know, have a little side conversation with them or what have you, which is great. With the Zoom capabilities, you're able to send a direct message to anybody who's in the same session as you at any time, which I really liked. I think that was a lot of fun. And to kind of get my first taste of like a conference management you know, interface. They used the on-air platform. I thought it was good. It allowed you to see what was coming up next, what your schedule was. And for those of you that attended, maybe you can, maybe you can't get the voice of the woman out of the head that comes on the virtual loudspeaker, right? It's like, boom, it's like the same tone that you get when it's time to like deboard or whatever they call it on the plane.
It's like
deplane. It's like the exact same frequency, you know? And then she's like, please move to the next session. And it's like, okay. I mean, this, you know, it tries to keep that feel for you of being in, you know, the space of a professional conference.
Wait, let me jump in real quick. So it's funny because my son, I love my son. He's 8. He runs around the house and is very entertaining. And I got to keep a straight face while I'm on Zoom. And he was like mid stride running by my desk when he heard the lady, and he like stopped almost like he was in trouble. And it reminded me of like when I was in Catholic school and you had the bell like that would ding when it was time to like go through classes. And I was like, I wonder if this is how it works at his school. Like if he heard that ding and was transported back to a school, but then he picked up mid stride and did not stay for, any of the rest of those presentations.
Not engaging enough. No, yeah. I mean, the bell schedule. I know that because I've talked to my colleague Dave Rosh over at University of Illinois. He said they still ring bells down there in Champaign-Urbana about between class sessions, you know. And
oh, wow.
So it's just part of the tradition, for sure. But you know, I think being able to, you know, go to so many sessions. There were more sessions than I could possibly have gotten to. I think they must have had 24 or 26 concurrent sessions where normally, just because of scheduling, you know, 12, 13 usually tops is what you're able to fit in. Recordings are going to be made available until the end of the year, I believe. I think it's through the end of December. So if you weren't able to get to something, you can go back. And that's different. You know, I've talked to some colleagues that are like, oh, I can't wait to go back and watch all these. And I had some colleagues that said, I'm not going to go back and watch anything. It's just not how I learn, you know, like they want to be like active and interactive participants. But there are definitely some sessions that I think I may go back, and I say that now, but I hope I do, because there were definitely some panel sessions and some others that, you know, were not interactive, like a workshop, that I would love to go back and see.
Yeah, you make some really good points about the different styles of presentations. I also think something to think about is the increase in technology. I think we thought we were doing it big when we had the scheduler app where you could, you know, plan your schedules and we weren't printing books. But now we're talking about this space where you now have this digital library of the world's most prominent speakers in leadership education at your disposal. You just click and you can sit in your living room and watch anytime that you want. And I think that's something that prior years, you just had to rely on those memories. You know, there's so many speakers that I've seen, like I think back to the story we tell every podcast, so Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, and how, you know, that was a meaningful experience, but it's there. We can't take it away. We can't bring it back home with us. Whereas with like Ron Riggio, you can watch that in a couple of weeks if you'd like. So I think there's definitely some benefits that the conferences, that the virtual conferences bring. However, I will be ready to go back to travel to these different spaces. I think one of the things I liked about ILA was they had a little area where it was supposed to be in San Francisco. If you had never been to San Francisco, you could click in this area and learn a lot about the culture of San Francisco. So even though if you weren't there, you could get, you know, a sense of what it was like. And so for me, I love traveling almost as much as I love leadership and sports. It was a nice way to learn a little bit about a place where I wouldn't be able to be. But speaking of ILA, so we presented at ILA this year, in addition to just attending.
What
were your thoughts about presenting at a virtual conference?
Yeah, I mean, so we were part of a session called Using Podcasts for Leadership Research, Education, and Development. So it was Lauren and I, and then we also were part of a larger group of presenters, Maureen Metcalf and Marty Dreiberg and Scott Allen, and they were talking about using their podcasts, either as research or as, you know, as other types of tools, as well as using podcasts as a leadership education, you know, assignment or teaching tool. And found them to be, you know, that we were all engaging. It was something that actually the association had grabbed all of us and said, hey, y'all submitted similar sessions, let's put you all together, which is a pretty common thing that the ILA does. Having been on the planning side of things with this particular professional association before, chaired the leadership education community back in, without a band, like 2013 to 15, I think. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we would do we'd look for similar types of sessions, because some individuals can submit with a group in what they call their symposia track, where that's the intent is, hey, here's four or five similar topics. We're going to submit these together in this track. And they're interwoven and integrated. Now the opposite is, well, not the opposite, but the parallel is the, you know, planners say, hey, these are all similar enough that they could have been submitted as a symposium, but perhaps these people don't know each other. And some of these come together really great, and you can create some lasting network opportunities for folks for till kingdom come, if you will. And so as a presenter, I think, you know, we got there 25, 30 minutes early. The chair, Abdul Rahim, had reached out to us a month before, maybe at least 3 weeks before, and said, hey, let's just do a run through on Zoom. You know, who wants to go first? You know, how about just the order that you're on the program? That usually makes it easy. And just to talk about flow, I think the way we did it was what, like 15 minutes each. And then there was, because we had 75 minutes, right? So 15 minutes each, four presentations, and then 15 minutes of Q&A. And I really like that format. I think that works live or online. For us, you know, we had to make sure technology was working, screen sharing was working, and that, you know, like anytime, you mute your mic when you're not speaking, and getting used to the Zoom technology, changing your name to say that you're a presenter so that people can, you know, pin you to their Zoom or what have you. So yeah, just a couple of extra steps. The good thing is nobody forgot their flash drive, and so there is that. But I think, you know, and being able to get live Q&A was interesting, where, you know, during in person, you know, you could raise your hand and there might not be time for that. But with the Zoom chat, you can ask a question anytime you want. It might get, you know, it might get answered, but at least your thoughts and your perspectives are out there. And there were some sessions that I went to where I was a presenter or a co-facilitator, and some, you know, very influential people in the field are sharing some thoughts that they have that, you know, you don't know what they're thinking. You don't know what Susan Kamavez or Ron Riggio were thinking when they're sitting in your session. And we had an opportunity to do that when they were so inclined.
Yeah, you're right. I think that was my favorite thing. While each person was presenting, you were able to see the questions pop up in the chat as well as the comments. I thought they did a really good job of encouraging not just people to ask questions about the material that we were sharing, but to also share their experiences. And I think one of the things that I really liked, like someone asked in our session about the kind of oversaturation of leadership podcasts. And I was like, you know, it's interesting, having listened to probably a handful of them, I thought that was such an interesting opinion because I just didn't see it that way. Like I could kind of define the different podcasts that I listen to and kind of what they bring to the table for me. And sometimes it's just a different style. Like most people don't know there are six different types of podcasts you can have. Like there's news, there's conversational. And so what it made me think about even more was, if we have lumped podcasts together just in this one big thing, like this big bucket, then maybe now it's time to go do a little digging and say, okay, so these are like the types of podcasts and here's some background. Because like our focus, we talked a lot about our process and what made us, you know, feel like this project was a success. We had a lot of data that we talked about, you know, like somebody asked us in our session, you know, did our numbers drop because of the pandemic? And, you know, because we talk about our number, we talk about our goals and we talk about our numbers a lot, we could easily say, well, no, we've seen very consistent numbers. And so that was nice, because I don't know that in a live presentation, that person would have asked that question and we would have gotten to address it and to share that information. And so I thought it was a really good job. The thing I was most impressed with leading into the conference, ILA did everything they could to make sure we knew how the technology worked. We knew the format. They were very thorough in sending that information out. I also appreciated too that I only had to wake up like an hour before, like our presentation, we had to be online at 7. I'm not a morning person. I'm a midday person. I'm a 9 to 7 person. And so having to get up and be live and present at 7:30 was a lot. And I just appreciated I only needed an hour I could be up for an hour prior to that. I could also get my coffee in my kitchen and have my breakfast in my kitchen. And I didn't have to worry about like trying to get to the venue or trying to find the room. It was, I had, you know, my link set up, so I was ready to go when it was time. So I appreciated mm-hmm. that a little bit about presenting.
Yeah, or running to grab breakfast only to get to the conference center and realize that there's a continental breakfast that was part of the conference registration. I can't tell you how many times I've done that. And I'm always like, I'm sure it's in the program somewhere. And I am wasting so much money buying a breakfast sandwich or a croissant or a granola bar and a coffee or a juice or something. And to realize that an entire spread was available to me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I am that person. And I'm like particular. I like, you know, I like Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts. And so they usually don't come with the continental breakfast provided. So I'm I'll just, what is it? Die on that sword or fall on that sword. I'll just mm-hmm. fall on that sword and be a little bit late. But I appreciated that too. Cause I think too, the thing I liked about it was one of the biggest things I liked was you got to see different people. So oftentimes because you're in this rhythm, you go to the same conferences, you sometimes see the same people, and that's wonderful for building community. However, there were so many faces I didn't know in our session. There were a couple I did know very well, but there were some I didn't know. And it was just nice to be exposed to different people who might not have attended because of the time of year or the location of the conference. Like I know ILA rotates being in and out of the United States. And so I feel like there's a broader net cast with the lower costs and the ability to just sit down at your laptop or sit down at your desktop and be at the conference. So I appreciated that.
I think the convenience factor is definitely there, you know, and certainly, you know, as I think about how expensive some of these conferences sometimes can be, depending on the venue and where you have to travel to, there's certainly been times where, you know, speaking to the community, you know, gosh, what was it would have been in Brussels, ILA's conference was there several years ago, and I connected with, you know, three colleagues that I had been, you know, we had led different communities together within the association, and we got an Airbnb together, you know, in Brussels, because it was considerably cheaper than the conference hotel. And, you know, just some of these different types of cost saving, you know, obviously the cost of the session itself the cost of the registration for the conference was considerably less because there was no food, you know, certainly less space and staff that has to be, you know, outside of the association that has to be paid. And so there was just a lot of cost savings that occurred, and convenience, you know, from not having to run up and down stairs or wait for elevators or what have you.
So it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things I was thinking about moving forward is institutional support. And so when I think about institutional support, I'm thinking about with so many universities and colleges cutting their budgets and reducing those expenses. You know, normally you get a small stipend, you get costs covered for attendance. Moving forward, that just doesn't seem like it's going to be available with I don't even know what to call it. Like, I guess like the financial situation, the higher education economy. You know, I know at our school, you know, they've cut drastically from our college's budget, but the bulk of funding is staff and faculty. And it's, you know, we still have students attending. We can't just cut all of our staff, can't just cut all of our faculty. So it's those programs, I think, that are going to be cut. But, you know, moving forward, like I know for me, I've now paid for a couple of conferences out of pocket that I normally would not have paid for out of pocket, just because I see the value and I'm committed to that. And I really just feel fortunate that I'm able to do so. I also am seeing with the virtual platform, there are more conferences that are now no cost. So there are a couple of really good local conferences that I've attended, and they're not specifically for leadership educators, but there's definitely content there that I can use for my work that I might not have paid attention to because I had, you know, kind of the standard conferences that I would attend every year. So I think that'll be the biggest challenge. Where are you going kind of in this next year? And what do you see moving forward in this kind of COVID civil unrest, post-political tension life that we're living in right now?
Just bundle all that stuff together, because that's our reality. That's our context. Yeah. So, I mean, short term, and I talked about this a little bit at the beginning of the episode, so the Leadership Educators Institute, that's that collaboration between NASPA, ACPA, and the National Clearinghouse. So they're going to be fully virtual in, I think it's the second week of of December there. And what are those dates? The 13th through the 15th?
14th through 16th, 14th
through 16th of December. And so, yeah, I am engaged with a pre-conference session with Todd Deal and Preston Yarborough, who are two former student affairs and educators and have also worked in some faculty roles. And we're Leadership Education Academy facilitators. In fact, that's where they connected, because Todd used to be at Georgia Southern running their leadership center there. Before that, he was a tenured chemistry professor, which I'm like, wait, from chemistry to running a leadership center? We'll have to have them on at some point, because they're two very interesting, brilliant folks. So they are also two folks that I engaged with when I did my sabbatical in 2018. So I spent some time with them, as well as spending time with Chuck Palace and Stemmon Harrison, who we've had on the show before. And so we're doing a fully online Zoom workshop. It was going to be face-to-face, but it's going to be called Exploring Leadership Education Tools with the Center for Creative Leadership. And so I'm curious to see what the participation numbers look like for that. They have had to go to bigger and bigger venues over the last few, they do it every 2 years. And I think there were over 600 participants when they had it in Orlando 2 years ago, and it just kept getting bigger and bigger. So definitely planning to engage in that. I only submitted, or I'm only engaged in the conference as far as a pre-conference workshop session, but I'm curious and looking forward to participating in some of the other workshops and some of the speaking sessions. I know Susan Comaviz will be there. I think John Dugan, Kathy Guthrie. So some well-known folks and very influential folks in the field are going to be engaged in providing some type of professional development and varieties of different ways. Beyond that, looking forward to, Leadership Education Academy. So we had planned to be in Silver Spring this past August. We instead did that series of critical conversations online with our facilitation team, and we're now meeting regularly with as a team to start to transform our entire program for some type of virtual experience. And more on that to come. But that's that Leadership Education Academy, and we'll figure out what that looks like and get some more information on ILA's website in the coming weeks or months. But that's a team of faculty and student affairs professionals from the US, Canada, and Australia. And I think there's certainly the competency is there and the capacity to transform this, but it's still gonna take a ton of work. So that's gonna be an interesting experience, because one of the things that we've, intentionally or just happened to leave out of that experience in previous years was online teaching and learning. We would have kind of pop-up sessions or, special interest sessions, but it wasn't embedded in the curriculum. Now it's going to be very embedded in our curriculum, as well as some things looking at social justice education and criticality and how to facilitate some of these tough questions and topics like civil unrest. And so that's going to be interesting. And then ALE 2021. So it's the end of June, June 27th to the 30th. It is still tentatively planned for Pittsburgh, but I know that a survey just went out to members in the last few weeks, just saying like, hey, and to your point, Lauren, like, do you have any funding? Like, could you go? Do you want to go? Like, and so it was hard to answer that survey, because it's like, yeah, I would love to go to Pittsburgh, but like, am I going to have any funding for my university right now? Everybody's travel cards are locked at $1, Bob, And so like we're just hanging out there, waiting to see what does that look like. And so I don't know if it'll be some hybrid version, which I know ILA has thought ahead all the way until, next October of 2021. Their conference is supposed to be in Geneva, and they're thinking about some type of hybrid. Does that make the most sense? Or does it make the sense to just be virtual? I don't know the answer to that. And I think we'll see how these things evolve.
Yeah, I'll say real quick, I know before we, kind of get out of here, one of the things that I love about this time is simply that we have been kind of challenged to take some of the content that we teach in class and bring it to life. And, we would on a normal basis, but I think now even more than ever, like our change management and our change management tools and our innovative practices, like instead of going into some of these conferences with the, same old questions, it's okay, now that we've got to deal with COVID and travel restrictions and financial restrictions. And I think now more than ever, because we're not going this isn't going away quickly. We'll always have this. And so what are we going to be able to do? You know, what are we going to do with this? So that's all I have to say. You have anything else?
And the only thing I would add, you know, since it is our sponsoring professional association of leadership educators. So call for proposals for that conference are due Sunday, February 7th. So you got plenty of time, but take a look at that call for proposals, www.leadershipeducators.org/conference. And that is a pretty robust call for proposals, very practitioner forward association, and looking for anything from research papers and posters to workshops, workshops and innovative practice papers. And so just a different types of ways to engage both for faculty and student affairs professionals. So.
Well, we'll end it there. We want to thank our audience as always for their continued support, and want to let you know we'll be taking a short break and anticipate returning in January 2021 with season 4. You can look for more information on that next month, and we hope that you truly enjoy this time as best you can during the winter holidays and get a little bit of a break, get to enjoy some, I love the food this time of year, so hopefully you get to enjoy some good food and good meals with families, socially distanced and practicing and observing CDC guidelines, but we hope you enjoy your winter holidays.
That's right. See you next year. That wraps up this episode of a Leadership Educator Podcast. And so one of the things that we think about as we reflect on the work we've done together, and particularly this season, is how we've been doing this podcast remotely via Zoom since the start. And some of the equipment that we looked at getting right off the bat was equipment that you would record a podcast in the same studio or live, but we knew that that wasn't going to be a luxury that we had. Who knew that, looking forward and reflecting on that, that this is pretty much how, even The Daily Show, the Daily Social Distancing Show, everything is being recorded remotely. And so we're following suit with that, and certainly keeping our 6 feet of CDC social distance.
Absolutely.
So with that, we invite you to follow us on Twitter. So I'm at @Dr_leadership, and Lauren is at @MrsLaurjb. That's Miss Laur JB. We encourage you to listen to the full episodes as they're released, as we can only share a fraction of the amazing stories that we share and that our guests share. You can find the episodes wherever podcasts are available. And we also encourage you to subscribe and rate us 5 stars, as the more you rate us, the easier it is for others to find us.
We would like to thank the James M. Cox Jr. Institute for Journalism, Innovation, Management, and Leadership within the Grady College of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Georgia. The support was facilitated by Dr. Keith Herndon, William S. Morris Chair in News Strategy and Management.
And our wonderful theme music was composed, performed, and mixed by Dr. Matthew White, trumpeter, composer, and educator, and he's currently the Associate Professor of Trumpet, Coordinator of Jazz and Commercial Music, and Director of Ensembles at Coastal Carolina University. You can check him out at www.mattwhitejazz.com. Matt, thanks so much for sharing your musical genius with our audience.
And finally, thank you to the Association of Leadership Educators. Check out what the ALE has to offer at leadershipeducators.org. We hope you listen as well as share with your leadership friends.